Welcome to Crit Tools. This week, Authority and Flat Organizations, Chapter 1, Your Boss is Still Your Boss, Part 2. The questions this class answers are, how do flat organizations affect your relationship with your boss? When can you exercise authority? And what one factor gives you authority in the workplace? People say the biggest career jump of all is the one from individual contributor to manager. And if you're thinking about taking that leap, then you'll need the Effective Manager 2nd edition, the book, on your desk. It'll be there with the actions you need to take, the guidance you need, and the support you want whenever you need it. Go to manager-tools.com, look for products in the navigation bar, and choose the Effective Manager from the dropdown. Okay, last week we talked about your boss is still your boss, and this week we're going to talk about how to exercise all of the things like authority and equality and collaboration and inclusivity that companies are giving us nowadays without breaking the bounds of those things that people rarely tell us about.
Mm-hmm. And our recommendation starts with choose your time and place. This is really kind of one of those elements which is not part of the empowerment literature. And when people get it wrong, they're punished for it. And we feel as if shining light on this will be useful for people so that they don't have to suffer simply because no one else told you. Because it seems really unfair to us that they don't let you know, hey, some sensitivity around time and place might be useful to you in terms of utilizing what you see as your empowerment, because the corporate, the managerial, the HR stuff, the missives, they all say, hey, consider yourself equal, take authority, act as if you own the business, feel empowered, be part of the shared leadership. And they don't mean at all times and in all places, which they don't tell you. No. They mean sometimes, somewheres. And they leave that part out.
Yeah. It doesn't sound as good, you know?
Yeah. And I think it is kind of limiting. And I think a lot of people in my talking with professionals limit themselves. Mm-hmm. And so perhaps if we're trying to be positive about why they don't mention it, it's because people are already limiting themselves sometimes in other areas. And so if given the detail of be careful, people might be more careful. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We do recommend that you be careful.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
More people are probably put themselves in a box than try and break out of it, maybe.
Which we talked a little bit about last week, right? Like sometimes people, the concern is that people won't take action when there's an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization doesn't want you to say, oh, well, you know, they said be careful, so maybe I shouldn't jump on this opportunity for new business or new clients or something like that. And so they're trying not to cause people to limit themselves more. And there is the consideration of, is this the right time? Is this the right place? Is this the right political moment? That kind of stuff. And if you have this information, then you can make good choices. And you don't have to limit yourself without saying, hey, is this a good moment, opportunity to do this? So we're here to tell you the stuff that they don't tell you, which is always what we're doing, I suppose.
Yeah. So empowerment is often described using similar words to these, which is some words that I got from a website. So empowerment in the workplace refers to creating an environment where employees are given authority, autonomy, and support to take ownership of their work, make decisions, and contribute to the organization goals. It involves providing individuals with the tools, resources, and information necessary to perform their jobs effectively and allowing them to have a say in the decision-making process. Which implies that the employee is given free-floating authority of everything they do whilst at work. And that really isn't true. It's like,
yeah,
you know, having a say in the decision-making process, but it doesn't say for their job. It's like, oh, I can just make a decision. I'll get up and I'll go to the factory and
right.
I'll look at the line where they're making cars and I'll decide. I'll say, oh, by the way, I think all of the bumpers should be self-colored or like they should be the same color as the car. And I have no right to make that decision at all. I have no idea what went into that decision. I have no idea whether customers like it. I have no idea of the cost of that decision. And there's nothing in that statement that says, I can't make that decision.
Right.
So why shouldn't I?
Even the way you verbalized it, allowing them to have a say in the decision-making process is not the same thing as being the person who decides, nor does it eliminate the fact that there are multiple people involved in the decisions.
Right.
Right? There's many, many people involved in these decisions. And just because you have a say doesn't mean they're going to choose your idea. Y'all, even if you're the most important person, they don't necessarily choose your idea. They might go with market research. Like
the CEO doesn't get to choose every time.
Exactly. Even in monarchies, there's no guarantee that, okay, there are places in the world, perhaps, where there is a person and all the decisions they make are followed through. It's not here.
Yeah.
And it's not at your organization.
That's not democracy, right?
Right. It's not democracy. It's really unlikely that that is how your organization functions. So keep in mind that just because you have, you know, tools and resources and you have a say doesn't mean that you get to win every time or that your decision will be chosen. We're still working with people. We still work with a bunch of people. There's still a lot of factors involved. And unless you, even if you have millions and millions and billions of dollars, you still don't always get your way, which we've seen recently. So there's that.
A couple of years ago, you and I don't know if you were living in Texas at the time. I think so, right?
Oh, yeah.
There was there was a freak storm and there was a foot of snow outside, which was freaky for every person in Texas because we've never seen snow. I have seen snow.
We live in the middle of Texas. There are parts of Texas that get snow, just not our parts.
Not our part. You're right.
Yeah.
Where I grew up, there is snow, but not a lot. And so, you know, I have seen the foot of snow, but not all of us.
And the biggest thing was not the snow, right? It was the disruption in electricity and power.
Exactly.
I mean, tens, maybe at least tens, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people were without power.
Yeah, for like a week and a half. And then the water stopped working because the water plants couldn't run because the power wasn't on.
Right. If you ask anyone in Texas, it was quite the dramatic and it was very, there was a lot of consternation, frustration. It was rough.
It was a big deal.
It was a really big deal.
It was a big deal. And the other big deal in Texas is the HEB grocery stores. If you ask anywhere, but anyone where they shop, everybody shops in HEB. And we all love HEB. And if you've been to one, you know why.
Sometimes people call Texas, in Texas, call HEB the third branch of Texas government. That's how big of a deal our grocery store is, HEB. So if you work at HEB, shout out because we love you.
We love you.
So yeah, we really do.
So one of the...
But they didn't have power.
They didn't have power. One of the HEB grocery stores, the power was out and the checkouts weren't working. And the store manager allowed all of the customers to leave with their groceries without paying. And this is a wonderful story of empowerment that the store manager did not call HEB HQ. He knew his budget. He knew what HEB corporate would want him to do. And he just acted. And everybody heard this story.
Yeah, we all talked about it. We're still, not even just on this podcast, but we've been talking about it. When people ask us about HEB, it's one of the examples I use of how helpful they are and kind and all that stuff.
So here's the counterpoint to that story.
Sure.
What though, if one checkout person had decided to do this on their own, would it still be a great story of empowerment? The checkout person doesn't have the same kind of authority that the store manager does, even if we talk about everybody being empowered. The checkout person could certainly call for the checkout supervisor and say, my checkout's not working, we don't have any power, can I let this person go? And the checkout supervisor can ask the store manager, but the checkout person just letting someone go, that is past their amount of authority, right?
Well, partially, and even if that is something that people feel like, well, why? Part of it is because they don't have a budget,
right?
They don't. The authority of being store manager comes from having certain parameters, which a checkout person doesn't have a budget, right? But a store manager has a budget. And so they can make decisions about their budget, not about necessarily just giving away groceries. This is it's a business decision, made with understanding of all different kinds of parameters that the checkout person isn't privy to, that even the like checkout supervisor person isn't necessarily privy to. You know, they don't know what the disaster budget is or what the what they're going to do about, I don't know, the freezer section in a situation like this. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. And it's not only just the authority, y'all, although it certainly comes with the authority, but there are other parameters associated with the title and the level that deem that person allowed. Is the checkout person just going to take it out of their like check, right? If you're the checkout person, it's like, I'll pay for your groceries. That's not the same. You don't have a budget.
No. So do people who work at HEB feel part of HEB's shared leadership and part of the company? And are they proud to work there? And are they incredibly tight? Yes, they are. Like everybody who works there, even the checkout staff. Absolutely. Does that give a checkout person that same authority? No.
No. And we're not saying we think they're tight, y'all. We know multiple people. My aunt works at HEB. She works in a software and like coding department. And she talks about how great it is to work there. So we're not just like guessing whether or not.
No, if I didn't work here, I'd work at HEB. Absolutely.
Right?
But it's just the demonstration that for a great place to work and a company that we know espouses all those values that the companies often talk about, it still doesn't mean that you get to make every decision all the time at every level.
Right. And you do get to give input until a decision is made. Okay. So as we're making the decision, as we're leading up to it, you get to give input, but not after. We call this professional subordination, or more memorably, the CAS that we talk about this particular behavior in is called, or we talk about, I don't,
It's called professional subordination. But whenever I look it up, I always look up murdering the unchosen alternative because that's the memorable phase.
Right. And you can, when you search podcasts on our website, you're searching the transcripts, which means you can search for very specific words and memorable words and things like that. So you can pull it from there. It's how we talk about the behaviors associated with you maybe didn't agree with the solution and therefore, if the thing that you wanted was the unchosen alternative, you have to behave as if it never existed. And okay, so I guess I can do that more elegantly, right? From the CAS, we say murdering the unchosen alternative means that while we can and should make a case for a given course of action or have an opinion or suggest an idea, once a decision has been made, all other previous ideas are considered moot and no action is taken towards them. Whether you were a supporter of the path that was taken or a different one, or if it was your idea, the other alternative was your idea, as part of a larger organization, your obligation is to lay differences aside once the decision has been taken and act on the decision without regard to previous opinions.
Done.
Yeah.
And so many people want to carry on discussing their opinion, their decision. They want to keep arguing for the color red after the decision's made. We said, choose your time and place. It's the wrong time and place, and it just gets you into trouble. No matter how people say they want to hear your opinion, they do want to hear your opinion at the right time and place. And after the decision is made, is wasting your time, it's wasting your breath, it's wasting your energy, it's wasting your relationship credits because they're just getting irritated with you. Just move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we suggest don't argue in public. There's a big difference between debate, asking questions to help yourself understand, and arguing. You probably know the difference, y'all. If you have to justify your behavior to yourself or someone else, you're probably not on the right side of the line. Just something to keep in mind. That being said, if you're in a situation and you don't really understand something and others are getting frustrated with your questions, that's also a good time to maybe back off. Mm-hmm. The buzzword version of that is take it offline, which is, you know, just a way of saying, we don't really need to have this particular discussion in front of everybody. We could have it somewhere else because not all of the conversations have to be held publicly.
And, you know, it is true that if one person has a question, then probably 10 people do have the question too. You know, that thing about like, if one person in the meeting has a question, probably there's three other people in the meeting who have the same question, but aren't going to voice it. But think about it this way. There's a better way to handle it than dragging the issue out and ruining someone's meeting agenda. If you've asked a question and the person who's answering is struggling to answer that question and it's turning into something fractious, or you keep asking questions and it's turning into not an argument, but just a debate, or it just mm-hmm. doesn't seem to be going anywhere, then just drop it and then go to that person after the meeting and say, look, I'm sorry, I really wasn't understanding X. Please, can you just explain it to me in like words of one syllable? Because it gives them the chance to explain it without an audience, to find the right words, to find a different analogy, to answer it with different, you know, for you to ask some different questions. And then they can go back to the meeting next week and say, I know this thing was difficult to understand and I've got a different way to explain it and I think you'll understand it now. And you have just given that person a real boost instead of mm-hmm. taking them down in public in a meeting. It may just be that they got flustered and they couldn't explain it because their head was going round and round and thinking, oh my God, I don't know how to explain this. And there's 10 people looking at me on a Zoom meeting.
Yeah. It's also true too that sometimes, like, if you ask a question and somebody else answers it, that's not what the first person meant. Mm-hmm. I had that experience recently. Like, somebody asked a question and the person who wasn't the originator and like a different person mm-hmm. answered it. And I could see the face of the person who was the idea originator, and that was not what they meant. Mm-hmm. So now we have three different opinions. And I thought to myself, okay, we need to like move this to another venue, because now we have what is essentially an idea that's been, like you said, like fractured, mm-hmm. where it's like, that's not at all what they meant. And it also puts the person whose idea it is or suggestion in a position where now if one person seems like they're against it, or it's like it's not a good idea, that other people might pile on, even though it is a good idea. It could be a kindness to recognize when a subject does not need to be hashed out in public and could be moved to another venue to be better understood.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Sometimes too, just more time for them to think about your question can help them answer it. I find that 3 hours afterwards, my ability to answer and clarify is much better
yes.
than 3 minutes after. Mm-hmm. Even if I wasn't sitting and thinking about what a person asked, mm-hmm. I just suddenly understand better, or it's not fraught with the stress or tension of the meeting or the stress of or tension of role power. And if your relationships aren't good, then you have that extra layer of the lack of assumption of positive intent.
Yes.
And if your relationships aren't positive, then there's an extra layer of maybe this person's just against me. Maybe they're just being contentious. Maybe they don't like my idea because they don't like me. So that's definitely also something to watch for, but that's something we can fix.
Yeah, exactly. Easy. We are getting ready for July, and we are sending our presenters out across America to bring you the Effective Manager Conference and the Effective Communicator Conference. We will be in Washington, D.C. on July 11th and 12th, in Detroit on July 18th and 19th, and in Charlotte on July 25th and 26th, and San Diego on August 1st and 2nd, which isn't in July, but, you know, we'll just sneak it in there. So if you are thinking about coming to one of the conferences and one of those locations is nearby, or it's an easy plane ride for you, make sure to go to the website and register now before all of those places are sold out. The way we fix relationships is to create trust. Flat organizations and the benefits of authority, transparency, empowerment, all of those good words, depend on your boss, your peers, and the organization being able to trust you, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And whilst we don't compare work to families and directs to children, it is a little bit like when we decide to trust our children to go to the mall on their own. We don't do it until we trust them to make good decisions. And we don't trust them to make good decisions until they've demonstrated they make good decisions. And we know they'll make some iffy decisions after we trust them, but we hope they'll have enough common sense that those decisions will be iffy, not catastrophic.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Iffy versus catastrophic is a pretty clear, well, it's a pretty big gap, and that's the hope, right?
Yeah, right. You know, your teenagers are going to do something that you think is like, oh, I wish you hadn't done that. But at least it's not like, you know, stealing a car or whatever.
Oh my gosh, there were some kids in my neighborhood driving a golf cart around. They were definitely old enough. They're not 16 or 18. They're, you know, high school kids. Maybe they don't have their driver's license, but they're definitely old enough to be driving a golf cart to the mailbox, which is what they were doing. And they were driving slightly more quickly than I would have, that I'm sure their parents would have liked to have seen.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, should these kids be driving a golf cart? And then I thought to myself, I'm sure their parents, you know them and have trusted that, yes, they're allowed to drive the golf cart. And if they get a little, if they, you know, go too fast on the golf cart, it's not going to cause like a huge, huge issue.
Yeah. Yeah. A little too fast on the road is different from they're going to crash into every car.
Right. And it's still a golf cart. I'm sure it only goes 25 miles an hour. It just seemed, you know, they look mm-hmm. wobble. It just, also they were making a lot of noise. I think that's what drew my attention. I was like, oh, we're having a really fun time. In any case, okay, this is not about golf carts. Okay, back to organizations. The way we create trust in organizations and in families, we'll leave that aside for now, golf carts and families aside, the way we create trust is communication. Much more communication than we think is necessary. Much, much more than we think is necessary. Human beings tend to fill in gaps in communications with negatives. That cliche, no news is good news, was invented to remind ourselves not to go down the route of imagining the worst. And we do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The less you talk to someone, the less inherently you assume positive intent from right. them.
That's why all the people say,
it's tricky.
My boss assumes I'm doing no work when I'm working from home. That's not true. Your boss doesn't assume that. And you assume that because you assume that if your boss didn't know what you were doing, he would assume that you weren't doing anything, right?
Right.
This is a whole thing of assumptions and they're all negative about everything.
Yeah, it's fully that if you have a lot of trust in someone, you trust that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you trust someone is to talk to them a lot and to know things and learn things and have a positive relationship through communication. So whether your boss, the person you've identified, has one-on-ones with you or not, if you want the benefits of authority, transparency, empowerment, and all those good words that were promised to you, we didn't promise them, but the organization kind of has, then you have to learn to communicate with your boss frequently in ways that make sense to her. And you have to wait to earn the trust, and you have to work to earn the trust. And you have to continue to communicate even after the trust is earned. It isn't something where you can say, oh, I've done all this work, we have a trusting relationship, and then abandon the communication, because that as soon as the communication falls off, the trust begins to slide as well. Someone I know from college came to town. We used to be really close because we used to live together. And they kind of asked me for a favor recently. And I haven't talked to them, minus, you know, them coming to town and us communicating a little bit. I haven't talked to them more than once a year in the past 7 years. And there was a moment I thought, you know, the fact that we had this really strong relationship in the past does not
mm-hmm.
necessarily guarantee the same level of right. support or communication or, you know, care or any of that. If you don't continue to invest, then the impact of the investment, I suppose, wanes.
Absolutely. And no one tells you this.
Yeah, yeah.
The recruitment pages, they're there. No one tells you this. The recruitment pages on company websites imply that employees are given the authority, autonomy, and support to take ownership from their work from day one. They say that failure is a step along the way to greatness, but they don't tell you that they still fire people for failing. What's mm-hmm. written on company websites is a sales pitch. It has little to do with the specific relationship between you and your manager. And in a lot of ways, that's a good thing, because the specific relationship between you and your manager is something you build yourself with the communication that you have.
Completely individual. You don't have any, you'll never have that same exact relationship with another person, and neither will your boss, because you are two people and relationships are unique to the two people in them. So even if you go on with a different boss, the relationship you have with your new boss, different. The relationship your boss, your current boss has with somebody else, different.
So totally it's a different. Good thing. And you have the ability to increase the trust in that relationship and gain all of the empowerment, authority, and transparency that you want. And we just told you how to do it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Kate.
Thank you, Wendy.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you.